Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
If you lost Big Brother and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to another edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and I am always just in judging whether people followed my rules, but nobody has ever accused me of being merciful about it. So joining me as always is my ally, who I would absolutely throw under the bus as too big a threat if I were nominated against her, Jessica Lewis.
Aw, thanks. I like to hear that I'm a threat to you. So that's good. Right. I'll take it.
And our guest this week is Chantel Francis from the class of 2020. Welcome, Chantel.
Thanks for having me. So happy to be here. And I hope that you've been kind. You know, I know that you haven't been merciless, but you've been kind, I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I will always be just. The question is just what? You know, as I was like, you know, when she said that, it was like, be just. Like, be just what? Just what? So that people who may not know you, Chantel, I know you've been on a number of RHAP podcasts this season. Where have people heard or seen you before?
In real life or on the Robin's podcast?
Anywhere.
No, I mean, I work as an actor sometimes in film and television on a few little things. But, you know, I work as a flight attendant before Corona shut down. But I've always had a love for reality TV. So I do my own, you know, YouTube channel, Reality Realness, with three S's, where we talk about some of these shows as well. And then within the RHAP community, I've definitely talked on the B&B before. I've done some updates with Taryn, done some legacy watches, and so I've kind of been around, and so I'm happy to be here to talk because I listen to you guys. So this is on my RHAP bucket list. Yay! It's like, I know the rules. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, that's good. That's a great start.
Well, I know of the rules.
Yes. Are you just in the rules? You know, are you just in judging? Saying just, I tell you, every time I say it, I expect there to be another word, you know, afterwards. Just what?
My brother's name is Justin, so I actually call him Just. So it does actually, I'm like, oh, wait, what? My brother? Like a little bit at times, too.
I'm just going to throw that in here throughout the podcast. Just going to say Just.
Yeah, Just. All right. Well, for anyone who is new to the podcast, each week we look at the player who got evicted and analyze his or her game using what we saw on TV, live feeds, interviews, other information. We compare everything about their game to a set of guiding rules I originally wrote in 2004 and have modified since, including the most recent version posted at robhasawebsite.com/bigbrotherrules. Now, normally, before we get to the rules, and in this case, Tyler, we usually discuss some things about the week in general. But as we've gotten down to these lower numbers, and most of the people there are kind of boring, I don't have that much to talk about. Do either of you have anything, you know, about this week or just in general?
I was actually surprised that there wasn't more of an effort to send Christmas home instead of Tyler. I know that there had been some discussions about it, just because I do feel like so many people potentially want to bring her to the end, and I get it. But at the same time, if so many people want to bring her to the end, then she's potentially taking someone else's spot in the end. So I just thought it was interesting that so many people are kind of having this realization that everyone wants to bring Christmas. So if everyone wants to bring Christmas, that means someone else is not going to be there. And so I thought it was just interesting to see that actually transpire.
Well, I actually just figured that Christmas was going to stay, because every single thing I could have possibly wanted to happen each and every week this season has not happened. So I'm like, Christmas is staying. Christmas is probably going to win the game. Like, anything that I do not want to actually happen, I figured that's the way it's going to go. So this week was no different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I posted on Twitter. I said, you know, this is 2020. That means we're going to get a final two of Memphis and Christmas. You know,
I don't even want to not to want that to happen. Because I don't want that to happen, it's going to happen.
Right.
No, I really have a theory. I think Nicole Franzel is going to end up taking it all, just because there was so much discussion about her before the season started, and all of the, like, I don't know, strings that she was pulling, and she was telling on people allegedly and getting people kicked out of the house allegedly. I don't know if any of that's true, but, and then they kept her and they kept her, and everyone's like, why are you keeping a winner? And I feel like if she's in the final two, it's almost like the people in the jury house are going to let her win just to spite everybody else. Just to be like, you guys didn't vote her out, so guess what? I think that would be hysterical.
That's a really dark timeline.
It is a dark timeline.
This whole season has been a dark timeline.
It really has been. It really has been. So I was thinking about that.
I'm hoping that the Mandela effect will take a place again, and then all this would be like a memory that I don't have. I won't have that false memory of Big Brother season 22, and I'll have a new reality that, like, people don't remember.
Yes. Yeah. Now, Jessica, getting to what you said about Christmas, I think that is a very Survivor way to look at things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that thought process has quite made it into Big Brother yet. The idea that if everyone wants to go to the end with this person, no, I want them to take me to the end. Because I know that it's happened repeatedly, especially in recent seasons on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that it's been the same on Big Brother.
It doesn't seem to be, because it's that no one's really crossed over into that, like, wait a second, kind of meant, you know, idea that that she's just taking everyone else's spot about potentially being in that final two. So, yeah, I mean, maybe it really is just more of a Survivor thing. But Big Brother people need to start thinking about that too, I think.
Well, I think it's kind of because Nicole Franzel seems to be running things a little bit more than we've been giving her credit for. And she does not want to have Tyler move forward. And I think that that was part of the, you know, the biggest reason why Christmas stayed. And then also with that, with when Tyler told Enzo about the committee.
Hold on. We're getting to the rules. We're getting to the rules. Hold on.
See? No, she's jumping ahead. It wasn't me this time.
It wasn't really a jump ahead.
I'm in full support.
It's a preview.
I'm in full support, really.
Yes,
I am.
Yes.
I mean, that could just have been, you know, something that happened. It has nothing to do with the rules.
Yeah.
It's a little side note.
That's Nicole's stuff.
Also, Jessica, getting back to, I think one reason it's a Survivor thing and not a Big Brother thing is Survivor has a final three and Big Brother has a final two.
No, so, that is true.
You know, there's more room for jostling around and also for bringing along someone who you believe you will easily beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So, all right, let's go ahead and get to the rules. Tyler has repeatedly blamed his loss in season 20 in large part on having too many final two deals. So he changed things up this time. But did he correctly diagnose the problem from his first attempt, or did he change the wrong aspects of his game and end up making things worse? It's time to figure out why Tyler lost. The first and most important rule is, of course, to scheme and plot. And Tyler seemed to understand this in both seasons he's played, and he did quite a bit of it, which we'll get to in a moment. But let's discuss what he didn't do this season that he did in his first season. And of course, I'm talking about what I just said in the intro there regarding him coming into the season saying he lost last time because he made too many final two deals. With that in mind, this season, he said he didn't want to jump into a million different alliances like his previous one. And while it's, of course, good to avoid scheming and plotting too much, the general consensus, and one that I agree with, is that it wasn't his problem the first season. So he was trying to correct the wrong issue, causing himself to cut off an important strategic area. And this had many of us concerned from the get-go. Turns out we were right. And you know, he seems to have even realized it now, because he told Dalton Ross, "I was trying my best not to do that, and then come to find out everybody's doing it. I think it's a good strategy, honestly, to get to the end, and the fact that it's All-Stars, and I feel like the jury is going to be a little bit more understanding." But the problem is, if you're answering a question to the press about it, and the game isn't over yet, you've realized it just a little too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that Tyler is... He struggled with what I think a lot of returnees struggle with, when whether it be Survivor or Big Brother that you're coming back to play. People have seen you play, so they know what you do. They know how you approach the game. And he unfortunately looked at his game and thought, well, that's what I need to change about my game, because everybody knew that about me and I got a lot of guff for it on 20. So I'm going to take a different approach. And unfortunately, like you said, he made the wrong adjustment, because that particular gameplay, it's not a problem when you are playing a game like Big Brother. It's good to have a lot of different potential options and potential final twos, as opposed to maybe you were a little too aggressive the first time you played, and so you need to rein that in a little bit. Or maybe you were, you know, not social enough, and so you have to be a little more social. Those are things that you can tweak about your game, but a strategy like that is not something that needs tweaking. And I really do think that he ended up making the wrong decision about what he needed to change about his game. And it was just a misread. And unfortunately for him, it was a misread that put him behind the eight ball with a lot of the things that were happening in the house.
100%. And, you know, I would have thought that maybe he'd be like, okay, how do I get to the end? Because I have the strategy to get to the end. I have the strategy to get, you know, three or is it nine jurors? Whatever, lose one by one vote. So right. Maybe he could be working on, okay, how do I make sure I get that extra vote down the road? Like, because I have a winning strategy to get to the end. Now I just need to figure out how to get that extra vote to win. And so if he maybe looked at it that way, as opposed to like, oh my God, like I made too many people mad. It's like, well, how about you just figure out how to make one less person mad? You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Like, he did a really great job. I didn't really give him that much credit for his gameplay the season before, because I don't know, I just wasn't really feeling his strategy at that point. But when I was seeing him playing this game, I was like, oh, you know, if he did a little bit more of what he did his first season, like, he definitely has a winning strategy here. And so he really didn't, in my opinion, edit it the way that he could have, because I think that he was in a position where he could have won this season.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, with that said, I do think he did, you know, quite a bit of good scheming and plotting, even if he only had one final two deal, which we'll talk about in a moment. He said several times over he would never turn down an alliance. It's just common sense. And he practically quoted what we call the Ghostbuster provision of the rule by saying, this is Big Brother, so when people come up to you with a deal, you don't say no. Now, we normally say, you say yes. Same thing. So, you know, he had a number of allies. They just weren't final twos. He was in the committee, the Slick Six. He was close to Cody, David, Christmas. He thought he was, you know, could work with Bailey and Devon. Even back when Nicole A was evicted, she told Dalton Ross that she thought Tyler was playing the best game because he was both working with a big group and still mingling and talking to people one on one.
He is very reminiscent to me of Jay from my season of Survivor, where he's someone.
I was thinking Jay, what Big Brother player?
No, Survivor. And yeah. I kind of had this epiphany today when I was just processing everything that we were going to talk about for the podcast. And Jay just had this way about him where everybody just liked him. I mean, he was very likable. He was very sociable. He was funny. And as much as he might have like driven you crazy because you knew he was going to do well in the challenges and you knew that he was socially, you know, someone who everybody really liked a lot, you couldn't help but like find yourself being captivated when you sit down and talk to him, because he is a very personable individual and he seems genuinely interested in you when you're speaking to him. And I got that same kind of read from Tyler, that he just has this ability to really connect to people. And because he's so good at connecting to people, then it's almost like you forget that you're playing a game with him and you forget that there's some strategy to what is happening. And it, because it comes natural to him, I think, to form those types of relationships. And that is part of his strategy. And I think it was part of Jay's strategy. And I think it's something that not very many people have when they walk into games like this. It's a struggle to form those bonds and it's a struggle to create those relationships. And for him, it's just so natural that I don't think he really realizes the strength that it could bring to his game or could have.
Yeah, I think he felt that it was a weakness. I think that that's what he felt was the reason why he didn't, you know, get that vote in the end, is because he burned somebody that thought that they were in a good relationship or their good friendship. But mm-hmm. I think the key to winning in Big Brother is to be able to stab your friends in the back and have them still love you for it. And mm-hmm. I think that that's where the finesse that he needs to have figured out is, like, how do I make them still love me and want to vote for me and be like, oh, Tyler, like, why'd you do that? But I love you, man. You got my vote. Like, that's how you want them to go to the jury house. You don't want them to be like, I'm never voting for you. Like, you know, he hurt my feelings. He stabbed me in the back. And so he just didn't learn effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. Now again, I mean, he did, you know, some other good things too. I just want to make sure we cover all the good things he did as well. You know, he was working over the course of several weeks to get the target aimed at Danny. He was trying to protect David, including being able to convince Memphis to not backdoor him a couple weeks ago. And of course, he had his final two deal with Christmas, where she would have basically been his new Casey, except she would have been a Casey who couldn't beat him at the end. You know, the better kind of Casey for him. You know, the two of them even managed to keep that pretty secret for a long time, though we'll get to that more in the second rule. But really, as Liana said on a recent live feed recap, the Tyler and Christmas final two was in many ways a final two in name only. It would have worked well for him if the two of them had made it to the end. But Christmas, meanwhile, was off making a side deal with Memphis that was certainly better for her because, I think Memphis is the only person she has even a slim chance of beating. This is that dark timeline that, you know, we were talking about. You know, and I have to say, I was very happy to see both Tyler and Christmas trying to save their own asses by throwing each other under the bus rather than deciding, oh, we're friends and allies and we can't do that. Because we've seen this season too many people refusing to campaign against the other person on the block.
Yes. And you have to, unfortunately. And this is what makes Big Brother so interesting, is you know who you're going up against. There's no question. It's not like a we're all going to find out, you know, like on Survivor the night that we vote. And am I going home? I don't know. I might be. It might be somebody else. You know, 100% who you're going up against. And so you have an opportunity to really rally against that person, which sounds terrible, but you have to do it in order to save yourself. And it was nice to see that they were actually attempting to do that, as opposed to, as you've referenced, so many other people just not wanting to because they didn't want to hurt the other person's feelings because they were friends and there was a personal relationship they had created. It was nice to actually see people going after each other, finally, a little bit this season.
Well, like, I think, though, too, with, like, having a friend or an ally that's beside you on the block, you don't necessarily have to, like, slander their name and tell horrible things about them. Like, you could just prove as to why you were a better ally for the other people moving forward. And I don't think that anybody can fully be offended by you wanting to do that. And so I am happy that they both took their lives and their game lives into their own hands here, and not, like, that's one thing that definitely frustrated me a lot about this season is, like, don't you guys want to make any other, like, allies and, like, any, like, undercover allies that people don't know about? Like, I wish there was more of that kind of gameplay going along in the entire season from pretty much all the players. Like, they just kind of, everybody played in defense mode. And so I wish that people were a little more offensive in, like, trying to, you know, steer the ship in the direction that's going to be more suitable for them. I think that, everybody failed in that sense for me.
Yeah. Careful being asking Big Brother players to be more offensive because,
you know. I should preface that.
True.
Yeah. In his final days, Tyler did what you said. He didn't, you know, when I say threw her under the bus, it was just, you know, like, oh, well, she's been doing this, but I, you know, I can do this for you. And Tyler tried that. He tried to get Cody to keep him around. Now, we'll talk about how the target got onto him to begin with when we get to the next rule. But once it did, Tyler tried to make it look like Memphis was a comp threat who could win anything, questions, puzzles, endurance. And, you know, and he said Memphis isn't going to take either of us to the finals because he knows that the jury doesn't like him. And then Tyler kept pushing on Cody, saying that Memphis and Christmas would target him. But it didn't work for a few reasons, one of which was that Cody had final two deals with everyone except Tyler and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And Memphis said he wanted to target Tyler and Nicole because they were the only two he didn't have an alliance with. So it all circles back here to this failure of Tyler's to make multiple final two deals. Everyone else had them and he was left out of them. And he was the odd man out, you know, at that point.
Yeah. No, and I think it's interesting. I did read that somewhere, I don't recall where, but someone was commenting on if he had been kept instead of Christmas, he was kind of like this lone ranger, if you will, because he didn't have any connections. So it might have been beneficial for somebody to scoop him up because he didn't have any of those deals. So someone could have potentially utilized him in that fashion. But I think at this point, it's probably, I mean, we're so far in and there's so few people left, a little too late to do that. But that might have been an option for someone. But like you said, I mean, other people like Cody has set himself up so well with all of the various options that he has. And if everybody thinks that they're your final two, well, then, of course, they're not going to put you on the block. Christmas is everybody's final two. So you know, she's sitting pretty. And so I do think that Tyler realized where he was. And he realized way too late.
Yeah, I'm really sad that he didn't kind of get it together. Like, even if a week earlier, like there was definitely different times within the game where he could have, you know, changed his course and he could have probably done a little bit better. But, you know, he kind of wanted to throw in the towel, I think, from halfway through. And I think that that mentality, he never really got to shake that. And he never really, everybody else playing with him didn't really get to see him differently. And so I think that that was the kind of the point where his, you know, what he was going to do in the game wasn't reliable anymore. And I think that they just stopped really wanting to play with him moving forward.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point.
Yeah. You know what? Let's go ahead and jump to the fourth rule for that, because I hadn't planned to necessarily. But since you brought it up, it tells players not to. I'm probably messing with your guy. You know, with me, I just scroll my notes, but you guys have paper notes.
So you're like, all up here. Okay.
Yeah, up there. Is that where they are? Yeah.
So mean.
The fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. And one area where Tyler didn't do so hot was what you were just talking about, Chantel, the way he handled the whole situation with Bailey and Devon and his attempted quit. And now, from what I've seen, I don't think Tyler was originally making a game move at that moment. I do think he really wanted to go. He told ET Online, I was 1,000,000% genuine in that because it took me a while to really get into the game and play Big Brother the way it should be played because I had so much on my mind about wanting to do the right thing, wanting the right people to be successful. And when they ended up on the block together, I felt like it was my fault. I felt so guilty that I could have possibly prevented it, and I didn't. Christmas kind of had to knock some game sense into me and be like, I can't backdoor you. You're my final two. From there, I kind of had to turn on Big Brother mode and keep playing because that's what I was there for. But I was 1,000,000% genuine. I would have absolutely sacrificed my own game for them. And then he added, I know that was a long quote. Then he added to Mike Bloom, my heart was talking. I wanted to see them both do well. And I wanted my friendship with Bailey to be repaired from Big Brother 20. I felt I was prioritizing that over the game. Now, we talked briefly about the situation on this podcast, Jessica and I think Adam was on at the time. And we noted that under normal circumstances, especially if he had been successful in quitting, we would be roasting Tyler for quitting because this podcast, all the rules, the whole concept here is doing what it takes to win. But I find myself not quite as able as usual to do that. because of what he says he was trying to accomplish, while he was in the middle of an alliance that was doing everything they could, let's face it, to only keep white people around. So, you know, I just, he had good intentions, I believe, when he, you know, was trying to quit, even though it would have absolutely, and I think, Chantel, like you were saying, I think that did affect his game going forward.
Well, and also it affected like how I think Christmas felt about him moving forward. I think that that allowed there to be a little bit of an opening for Memphis to come in and get able as like a committed like final two, you know, like, yes, she has Tyler there, but she was willing now to lose Tyler because Tyler was willing to basically throw away Christmas's game for an right. emotional response, as you're saying, to, you know, the situation. So yes, she did snap him back into the game, but that was just probably for her moving forward. But I don't think that she had her same, you know, connection with him. Okay, me and you, final two, let's ride this to the end. I think it's like, okay, we can stay together as long as possible, but I'm not putting all my eggs in the entire basket here. I'm going to maybe like look for other ways to benefit myself moving forward.
Yeah, I think it really destroyed so many things for him because you had what was a heartfelt, I think, desire to really further something for two individuals who are playing this game. And unfortunately, that was then taken away from him because there is still a game and he would be negatively affecting someone like Christmas, who he's playing the game with. And so it's, to me, I struggle as well with like, how can I fault him for wanting to do something that is so respectful? But then at the same time, he didn't do it because of the game and because of the circumstances he was in with the people he was playing the game with. And so I do think that it hurt him in every which way that it possibly could, because he's destroyed a potential, you know, relationship with people because he didn't do what he wanted to do when he made a representation and then he didn't carry through. And then at the same time, people who are playing the game with him think that he wants to quit. And so they don't think that his head is in the game and that he's really going to be playing as hard as he can. And so it really did just wrecked things for him across every potential avenue that he had. There's no really recovering from that. And I think that's exactly what we saw happen with Tyler.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will say some people have recovered on Survivor. There have been a few people who have tried to quit and then their tribe mates wouldn't let them. And I believe one of them won the game. So I believe Jenna in Rob's season.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, yeah. Aubrey, no. Aubrey was somebody. I'm like, she close, though. She should have won, I thought. But
yes. Well, yeah, exactly. But yeah, for Tyler, when he spoke to Christmas about the situation, he said he felt responsible for Bailey and Devon being on the block because he was planting seeds and trying to use them in his fight against Danny. And, you know, Christmas, who was Tyler's final two, said that wasn't it. You know, it wasn't his fault. She tried to make him feel better and said it was the whole quote unquote untouchable thing. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because you're talking, Christmas, you're talking to your untouchable at the time and saying it was the untouchable thing that was the problem. We know there was more than that. We've discussed it many times. But no matter what the reason was, Tyler shouldn't have been feeling so guilty that he would throw his game away.
Yeah.
You know, even though he was unsuccessful in getting Christmas to evict him or trying to quit, I, you know, like we said, it damaged his standing in the house and specifically with her. And, you know, let's tell the truth. If he really wanted to quit, he could have quit.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
He would have faced the financial repercussions of quitting. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that had a big part to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to quit, you can quit. And we've seen plenty of people who have done just that and playing games like this. When they make that decision, when they want to quit, they have that choice. And yes, Christmas sat down and talked with him and convinced him otherwise. But I do think that there was other things that were happening for him that helped to convince him to stay. But it is such a difficult thing for, I think, anyone to recover from. If everyone who's playing this game with you wants to really kind of, let's just say Tyler makes it to the end, right? Let's just pretend he makes it to the final two. And people who are on the jury are going to be looking at him and saying, you wanted to quit. Like, you were legit going to quit this game. Like, you were going to leave, and now we're suddenly supposed to reward you for making it this far, even though you wanted to quit the game. I think that that would certainly have an effect on how I voted, knowing that somebody wanted to quit but managed to make it to the end anyway. So I do think that if you're going to make a statement like that, regardless why you want to do it, you really need to be ready for everything that's going to come at you from it. And I do think that Chantel, you said it perfectly, that, I mean, it just, there was nowhere for him to go once he made that remark. And once he said he wanted to quit, it really just destroyed his ability to continue to play the game with anyone, because like, Christmas was only going to utilize him as long as she needed to, which is exactly what we saw happen.
And I actually never looked at this way before, but I wonder if, you know, the guilt that he was having was also for the fact that he knew that the committee was going on, and he knew that it was predominantly, you know, the white male men and women that were running the game. And, you know, he contributed to getting the two people, the women of color here, sitting up on the block. And so I wonder if that also was a guilt, like knowing that it was like, it was also, you know, a race dynamic there that like he was a part of. And like, I feel like that might have been creeping in a little bit, like that. Right. And that's where like the authenticity of that plea, I think, also might have come from as well. But we haven't really been talking about that part of it in general.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. So, all right. Well, let's jump back to the second rule here, which tells players not to scheme and plot too much and to keep their scheming secret. Now, when we were talking about the first rule, I already referenced a couple of things that, you know, we were going to cover here. And we can start with his one final two deal, which he had with Christmas. And while they kept it under wraps for a while, apparently a wall yeller exposed it. Thanks, wall yeller. Boy, you're so helpful in this game. This is why, yeah, I mean, everybody's heard it from Taryn and various other people. This is why I hate the wall yellers. You know, at the beginning, the first wall yeller, everybody was like, oh, look, they're doing something good. No, you know, it was never going to just be the one thing. And then it went downhill from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why people are running out there yelling into the game. Just let the game happen.
Because it's a game that everyone is watching live, right? And
yes.
So there's this, the world that we currently live in is full of, you know, cell phones and videos and Facebook posts and YouTube. I mean, just all of these things that people can like put themselves out there and be like, look what I did. And I'm sure that it's that type of mentality where you have a live program with live feeds, and they're probably telling their buddies, hey, listen, I'm going to go yell over the wall. Check it out. See if you can hear me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm sure that that's part of it.
Oh, yeah. It's,
and
yeah.
It's certainly not, being done to help the game at all. I mean, all it's doing is just destroying things that we're watching on the already
right.
problematic Big Brother season.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, with the wall, yeah, obviously, I agree with the beginning. I was like, okay, at least it's shaking something up a little bit and getting people thinking. But on a whole, I don't think that I'm actually a fan of it because, you know, like I like seeing the game unfold, and that's what I enjoy about watching Big Brother. It's like, even if it's not my favorite season or the favorite cast members, like I like watching what happens in the game. It's a social experiment, as we all like to call it. And I just want to see it as it is. I don't want to see any external things. I usually don't like production interfering. So why do I want
right.
some outsider that has an agenda that might be different from what I want to see happen in the season, go in there and kind of change things up. And so I'm going to say that I do not enjoy the wall yeller.
Yes.
Yeah, it needs yes. to be an organic process, and the game needs to be able to play itself, and you're getting outside help. It's like cheating on an exam. Like, you just can't do that. And if
right.
no one had known about their final two, who knows what would have ended up transpiring.
Yeah. Well, now, I mean, the others did see, this is the problem. We don't know. Did the others pick it up naturally, or did it come from this? Because the triple eviction did reveal that, because Enzo at the time said, oh, this shows yo how tight yo they really are, yo. it wasn't so much being a duo with Christmas that was the problem there. It was the way they thought they could get Enzo to vote out Nicole in the triple, while Enzo stuck with Memphis instead, which put Tyler on the wrong side of the vote for the first time ever. I mean, other than the season 20 jury vote. Now, as much as I hate to say it, you know, they schemed and plotted too much by going against what the Alliance wanted. And I know we have railed against and made fun of the people for following the committee. But the fact is, that group was pretty much all that was left. And Tyler tried to make a move too soon. And more importantly, it was a move against what Memphis wanted. And no matter how stupid it was that Memphis wanted it, you know, wanted David gone, it was a move against Cody's final two ally, Nicole. Now, of course, almost everybody is his final two, but I think Nicole may be the real one. And, you know, so he pissed off Memphis, he pissed off Cody, he pissed off Nicole, and it just, you know, put him in a bad position there.
Yeah. I think when you find yourself in a group like that, you are, unfortunately, when you're so far into the game and there's so few people that are actually left that are outside of that group, you're so limited in what types of moves you can make and when you can make them, because the first one that ruffles any feathers there, the first one that tries to go against somebody from that group, is going to find themselves on the outs. And we see it time and time again when you have such a strong core group of people who are not ever going against each other. They're always doing what the group wants. They're always discussing what the vote's going to be. Nobody is going against the grain. The first person that does that is exactly what we saw. And Tyler put himself in a very bad predicament because of it. If he had pulled it off, it would have been great, you know, because it really definitely would have shifted things. But unfortunately, with the gameplay that we are seeing this season, that's just not happening. And he found himself now the subject of doing that. And now all of a sudden he's on the block because of it.
When Tyler and Enzo were crossing paths to go vote, I think that was the most excited I'd been for 10 seconds in all of season 22. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Is Enzo, like, I was so excited in that moment that it was just like deflated to balloon. I'm like, oh, okay, no, it didn't happen. I was like, I really thought when they first went to vote, I was like, oh my God, like if they're going to do with it, especially knowing that Tyler is pretty much, he's always been on the right side of the boat. So like, if that's the boat, and then it was longer than usual, that little talk in exchange in between, I was like, wow, like this is crazy. And it didn't happen, but no. I was hoping for it so badly when I saw them voting so confidently.
Yeah. Now after that, so, you know, Tyler basically in that vote started a small fire on the bridges he'd built, but he decided to completely burn down those bridges once he was nominated. You know, earlier in the season, we saw Tyler trying to pull Enzo away from Cody. Meanwhile, Christmas saw that Enzo was tight with Cody and Nicole, but Tyler just didn't. And apparently it never caught up to that. I guess he felt he'd been successful enough to quote unquote reveal to Enzo everything about the committee, which of course Enzo already knew. You know, and then plus he threw a bunch of BS on top of that about how Cody supposedly wanted Enzo gone, but Enzo was never going to believe that. And instead did what Enzo always does, ran right back to Cody to tell him everything. And so this was, you know, the target had been on Christmas, but upon hearing this, Cody switched it to Tyler. And it never moved off of Tyler again.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that this is what makes Big Brother harder to play, in that when we were talking about it before, when you know you're up against someone and you know who's on the block against you and what do you need to do to try to save yourself and put the other one, put the heat on the other person. And Tyler was trying to do that. But unfortunately, again, what we have seen, because everyone is so tight and you have all of these people who are making these final two deals and final three deals. And I don't even know how many alliances we have at this point, with all the different names that they've come up with. But and Tyler was kept out of most of that. And as we've discussed, and so his desire to try to better his situation actually just made it worse because of all of the gameplay that everyone else was involved in. And it, you know, even though I've got to give him credit for trying, he was trying to make moves and make things happen with a group of people that were all like, you know, they're all like this. And so, of course, there's going to be no secrets, and you're certainly not going to be helping yourself by throwing somebody else under the bus when that person's going to run back and tell the person you were just talking about what you just said.
Well, and also, though, with Tyler and his, maybe even any logic that he should have been placing, at least at this point in the game, is like, okay, he only has one final two. And Enzo must have a final two. And it's not you. Yeah. So, like, why are you spilling all the beans here when you don't necessarily know who his final two is? Because it isn't you. And so the fact that that just didn't even cross his mind as to, like, maybe just, you know, hold that information a little bit closer to the vest here. Like, I just don't understand why he felt that he was in such a strong alliance with Enzo. Yes, they're in the triple threat, whatever. But, like, he has a final two with somebody else that wasn't him. I wish that he had just thought about that for a second before he decided to spill that, because I think that that would have been a lot better for his game moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that was the problem was the timing. And the LFC discussed it in this week's Roundtable podcast, that he approached Enzo with the information before the veto. You know, he was trying to get Enzo on his side in case Enzo won the comp, so he would take Tyler off the block. But he played it all wrong, because that showed his desperation, which meant he didn't trust Cody. And if he didn't trust Cody to keep him safe, then Cody's got to be thinking, well, why doesn't he trust me? What's going on here? And then it ended up, like so many of these situations do, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I don't trust Cody to keep me safe. Cody finds out that I don't trust him. Now Cody doesn't trust me. Now I'm gone.
Right. Yeah. It's a bad, bad game of telephone.
Yes.
No, there's just a whole lot of gossip mongering. It's gossip mongering and not enough listening. And I really do feel like a lot of people this season have fallen into this trap where they hear a bit of information and they take that information and they run directly back to whoever they heard it about. And we've talked about this already, not this podcast, but previously, where it's, okay, I'm not supposed to be telling you this, so don't say anything. But, you know, okay, no, I'm not going to, I won't say anything. And then they immediately do. Like, as soon as somebody says, I won't tell, that means they're going to go tell. I mean, it's so I do feel like there needs to be more listening as opposed to, like, they just kind of throw up on all over each other. Like, here's everything I know. I'm going to give it to you on a platter, and then you can go do with it what you want.
Yeah,
I've played a few live reality game versions of Big Brother, as well as some online versions. And what I've learned is the most valuable thing is knowledge. It really is. And you have to, like, no matter how much you want to just gossip and talk about things that are going on, it's like you really do have to keep it all in, and you save it for the final two speech and be like, this is all the things that and how I was using this information or whatnot. Because anytime any information got out there, people were just easily able to, oh, I'll pick that information up and I'll use that against you. Perfect. And gives them ways to use that information against you. And so I was surprised by how much information was just given to the major alliance, because then they were able to just filter it out and, like, okay, now we know that Case was trying to get Ian in. Okay, so let's block that. Let's start a final four, like a four, you know, a foursome alliance with him. And so that will block that, you know, potential threat. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we just kept on seeing happening over and over and over again. They get more information, and then they are able to react and create a barricade from them, you know, getting the extra power on the other side. So I was shocked that people were playing so messily. Like, these are all stars. These are people that have at least played the game before. They've seen at least one season, most of them. And I just
No shade there. No shade.
I just want to hope that they just knew to keep their mouth shut.
I know. No, and we just did not see that. We really didn't. I was surprised. No. I was very, very surprised at how quickly. And it wasn't even like, I'm just going to give you a little nugget. Like, I'm going to tell you everything. Like, I'm going to tell you the entire conversation. I'll tell you where we had it. We were sitting on the hammock. It was yesterday at noon. I mean, it's like the more the details I could throw in there, the better. It was really, really fascinating to watch. And then to see it immediately work against them, as was what happened to Tyler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
We're back, so let's get back to the show.
All right. Well, we can move into the third rule, which talks about the need to be flexible. And I feel like with everything we discussed regarding Tyler not having more final two deals, he wasn't as flexible as he should have been. Jessica, what do you think?
No, I think that is a fair assessment because he wouldn't allow himself to be. He thought that that was one of the reasons why he didn't win on season 20. And so he overcompensated. And because he overcompensated, he lost his ability to be flexible, which he was so very good at in his previous season, keeping those options open. And he limited himself and unfortunately missed the boat because so many other people had already glommed onto each other. And okay, you're my final two, you're my final three. I'm going to have another final two of it here and a final three. And this is a four. And he was like, Christmas. Yay. And that was it. And locked himself into Christmas, who did not do the same. And I think that's an interesting fault of his, that he was convinced that he was Christmas's final two, when in actuality, she had multiple final twos as well. And he wasn't realizing that or even considering that that's an option. So I do think that his flexibility was not what it needed to be at all.
And also, when he was head of household, and I believe he put up Janelle and Kacer, I think that that could have also been an opportunity where he could have exercised some of that flexibility here and realized, mm-hmm. like, okay, well, if this major alliance wants this, but like, is that going to be best for me moving forward way down the line? Like, let me maybe just be a little bit more malleable in these choices here to make me be set up a little bit better down mm-hmm. the road. And I think that that was probably where the beginning of his downfall went, was like, right when his head of household, is that he didn't line himself up better for later on in the game. He just took out people that could possibly have been working with him. So I don't think that Janelle was actually actively aiming for him at that particular moment. She, you know, there was some broken telephone that was happening back and forth with like targeting whom and whom. But like, I think that he could have been able to set himself up to be either working with Kacer or Janelle, having one of them stayed and like have like a little, you know, secret alliance that was happening. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. He was like just all in for the committee, and he really wasn't allowing himself to be flexible with any other options. And so he just burned all of his bridges here.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, like so many other people we've talked about here, which was you voted out all the people that could have worked with you early. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you know, and I mean, that's, you know, the committee, and again, this is something we've mentioned on a previous podcast, but the committee is great for one person.
Yeah.
You know, the winner.
Mm-hmm.
I say Cody. Someone else said probably Nicole. But, that's who the committee is great for. Everyone else, you know, I mean, I guess second place it's okay for. But mm-hmm. everyone else, it's, you know, you might as well have gone out, you know, at the very beginning of jury.
Well, and that's why it's very important that you are mindful of how you fall into that
right.
committee. And I think so many people have forgotten how they rank. You've got it. If you're number six, then you're not winning. And yeah. and that's why you need to have those side deals. And that's why you need to bring in other people outside of the committee to try to help you. That's why Enzo has been such an incredible tool for someone like Cody. Yeah. Well, I'm not being mean when I say that. No, he really, because he's giving information to Cody. He's convinced that he's Cody's number two, and he's not even in the committee. And so Cody has put himself in a much better position because he has someone outside of the committee that he is loyal to and who is just as loyal back. And unfortunately, you know, Tyler didn't do that for himself at all. He really did lock himself in to the committee and everyone on the committee. His final two was in the committee, and that was it. And it's just unfortunate that he didn't step back and go, okay, well, how do I rank here? And who's really in charge and who's really calling the shots? And I'm just blindly listening and I'm doing everything the committee is asking me to do. But is that really the best thing for my game? And I just don't think that he ever had that conversation with himself.
I think also maybe part of the problem with him not being able to see another perspective is that they didn't lose power. And so he didn't have to readjust and reconfigure his game and like have a different game plan. And so I think that that allowed him to have all these blind spots, is that like he didn't have to think outside of the box because, oh, we're winning, so I don't have to make a hard decision, or I don't have to like, you know, change my strategy here. And so I think that that also was hard for him to, you know, pivot around or be more flexible within, is that he didn't have to really do anything, and then he just lost people to play with, you know. He just lost his any opportunity, but he didn't have the chance to maybe fix that beforehand because he didn't have to re-strategize.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, because I do think that if something had shifted early on in the season, obviously we'd be watching a much different season, but that really would
better season.
That's true too. But it really would have forced the committee to have to fight each other, you know, and it wouldn't have been such a force in the house, because if they had lost power, it definitely would have negatively affected them. And I do think that that probably would have been a really good thing to see the reaction from the people in the committee and what they would have done with it. And I think someone like Tyler, knowing that he's so good at building relationships with people, that I think he could have succeeded very well if there had been a power shift. So I think that's a really great point. And unfortunately, they just never lost. So he got very complacent for sure.
Yeah. 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 Jessica, when you said Enzo was a tool, I was about to jump in and say, no, Memphis is the tool.
I'm not being mean.
Are you being just?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm being just.
Right. Okay. Now, I do want to discuss, speaking of flexibility, Chantel, you talked about his early HOH, but his last HOH in the triple there. What do you think about whether he should have been more flexible when it came basically to the end of the committee? You know, he went against their wishes anyway by trying to vote out Nicole, and then he becomes HOH. Should he have just gone full out and put Cody and Enzo on the block? You know, he could have probably gotten Christmas to vote out Cody. And I think Memphis would have as well, in all likelihood, since Enzo was the key in both of the wise guy alliances. Tyler, yeah, he would have immediately been seen as a huge threat, but things would have been in disarray without Cody, the leader there. And I mean, let's face it, you know, results oriented thinking, it couldn't have ended up any worse for him.
Well, I think that, you know, Tyler was really believing in triple threat. I think he really believes in Enzo. And so I don't think he was going to go against Enzo. I don't think he would do that to Cody, just because, like, even in the very beginning of the game, he was like, me and you, let's ride this thing to the end. So I think he still has a little bit of that in his head, even though they haven't shaken on like a final two deal or anything like that. I do think that he was believing in sticking with the triple threat. And so I think that he had to, because he just had done that, you know, voting Nicole out over David. He's probably like, okay, maybe I can at least get Nicole out if something happens or whatnot. And Danny had been actively going against him and wanting to have him out. And so I think that I can understand why he made that decision, but it was also like kind of his opportunity to get out a major threat. So maybe even if he had put up Cody and Nicole in that situation and just be like, listen, like I had to get Nicole out because like, you know, I just voted her out. I didn't want to come back to haunt me. I'm so sorry, Cody, but you're the only one that she would go home against, or whatever it is. Like maybe that could have been the play, but I think that he was more worried about going against the two guys that he kind of had in another alliance with, that he wasn't going to be willing to make that move.
It would have been a great time to do something like that, though, because they didn't have a week to talk about it, right? That's the moment to really kind of throw a wrench in the works, because you know that you're going to basically have like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever it was that they had, to really discuss and try to strategize, because everything was moving so quickly. So I think that would have been a great opportunity for him to do something like that, because it would have thrown people off so much, and it really would have had to force them to make a decision that they wouldn't want to make. And they also wouldn't have had a week to really think about it.
Yeah.
I also think that Tyler, I don't think he was thinking of any other scenarios. Like, I think he was just like, I'm just going to get Danny out. I'm just going to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just what was in front of him. I don't think that anybody, I said this before, was thinking a few steps ahead. And I don't think he even thought about the fact that he could never beat Cody in a final two. I think he was just trying to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, again, goes back to the flexibility issue, you know, from this. So. All right, well, we already did the fourth rule, so we can skip to the fifth rule, which tells players they need to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And, you know, Jessica, you already talked a lot earlier about, you know, how, you know, comparing him to Jay. And you were talking about strategically, but also just, you know, that is the social game. And I don't think anyone had a bad word to say about Tyler when it came to this aspect of things. You know, we could just look at, you know, Janelle. She told Mike Bloom that Tyler, the guy who put her up for eviction, was a super sweet guy and she had nothing but good things to say about him. Mm-hmm. Nicole A. told Dalton Ross that Tyler had empathy and compassion, even though he was on the other side with the big alliance. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that people thought of when they thought of Tyler.
Yes. So, and I think that that's why he could have been so much better in this season if he had utilized that instead of shying away from it the way that he did.
Yeah, because I think he felt that even we see it as his biggest strength, and that's what he is good at, is like making these connections with people. But I feel like he thought it was his biggest weakness and he was kind of hiding from that. And you know, kind of at the beginning of the season, he was just talking about how he hated everybody and he didn't want to be there, and like he was really depressed. And I think it's because he couldn't play the game like he would do naturally, because he felt like that he didn't like, you know, the repercussions that he got from some people, that he hurt their feelings. And so I feel as though, you know, his greatest strength became his biggest weapon, or like, you know, it ruined his game because he didn't want to use it anymore. And I think that that's when, like, when he decided from the very beginning that he didn't want to play that social game, making all these final twos, I think that that's the beginning of the end of his game, because that's his strength and that's what he needed to use to win. To get to the end, at least.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Tyler right now. I do.
You got it. You're trying to be merciful. See, that's you know.
But it is true. It is very, very true. Yeah.
Right, right.
He's an Aquarius like me. And so I think that like I understand a little bit what he's going through, because like I'm good at making those kind of social connections. And so I could see how maybe if like that went awry one time, I'd feel really bad. And so I'm feeling for Tyler right now.
Yeah. All right. Well, the sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And several times, both before and after his eviction, we heard him saying a variant of, if I were one of these people, I would vote me out. And so he absolutely knew he was a threat. Of course, he wasn't the only one, because his fellow players made similar comments. Cody said, Tyler's too good to not vote out when you have the chance, and that he wasn't sure who Tyler was loyal to. Plus, he's a comp piece. Memphis said Tyler was a big effing threat and wanted to make sure Cody understood that Tyler was a top competitor. He even told Tyler straight out that he was a beast. There was no doubt how others saw him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think that the fact that he was great at comps in it's this late in the game, I think it elevates your threat level, because everyone begins to realize how significant getting head of household becomes the closer and closer you get down to that four. And so I think that everyone is very mindful of that. And if they don't know where your loyalties are, and if they don't know who you're actually going to be fighting for, then that also elevates your threat level, because there's a potential that you could be that person's target. And so I think all of those things are swimming in everyone's brain at this point. And he is someone who everyone was kind of questioning, is he going to win? And if he wins, who is he going to put up? And we saw what he tried with Nicole, which means he's not really with us. And so who's he going to put up next if he wins again? So I think at this point, his threat level increased exponentially.
And I also think that, his previous season. I'm sure in Sequester, they got season 20 for them to be going over people's games. And so they probably had how well he did, especially in the later half of the game, with like winning all these different competitions. And so I think that his previous season also added to his threat level, because he's done some good things, obviously, this particular season, but like not as impressive as his previous season. And so as his pedigree has actually like went against him here, because, you know, that became part of his threat level, even though he hasn't shown it in that in this particular game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Jessica, I think you hit the nail on the head there. He was always a threat. That was not anything new. You know, and I had a note in my compilation of notes from weeks ago that people were starting to realize Tyler was a threat socially, strategically, and physically. Bailey said in her RHAP interview that Tyler was playing the best and everybody was on his side. That's all she heard. Tyler, Tyler, Tyler. And, you know, even Ian told Dalton Ross that he thought Tyler and Cody were playing the best game by far. But that's just it. It was also and Cody. And Cody talked about how he wanted Tyler around as a shield for a long time. We heard that. We heard Enzo say it, too. And it was all well and good to have Tyler around as a threat in the game early and as you got to the middle. But suddenly, like you said, you're at the final six, and that is just too close for comfort.
Yes, 100%.
And especially if he's not, as you both have said, been loyal to the committee at this point. Right. Like, and he hasn't been making all these final twos, but it's like also like, well, no, but he's a final two guy. Like, they're probably believing that he has more
and that's true.
Oh, absolutely.
He does.
Yeah.
And so all these things that he's trying to fight against, he needed to be leaning into it a little bit more. It's like, okay, well, they probably see my season, so they're going to know that I'm a comp beast, and they're going to know that like I'm going to probably be really social and make a lot of final twos. So I have to expect them to be expecting me to be doing that, and so pivot within that. But he completely just like ignored the fact that they might have an idea of how he's going to play the game, and he became a big threat because of it, because that's what they think that he was going to be doing. You think that he's going to be playing a better game than he actually was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that third level thinking. And you're right. If you know that this guy makes a lot of final two deals and he hasn't made one with you, your assumption has got to be he's made them with everyone else.
Yes. 100%.
Oh, he hasn't made any at all.
Like, oh, Tyler switched things up this season. He's not making final twos. Right. No, he's made final twos with everybody except me.
Yes. Yeah. Like, okay, he's made final two with me. That means that he must be leaving me open for to be a target. Okay, we got to get rid of him. And so everybody's thinking that. They're like, oh, got to get rid of him.
For sure. Yes.
All right. Now, the seventh rule says to trust almost nobody. And I think Tyler did pretty well here, because I think he knew better than to ever really trust anyone. But Chantel, what do you think?
I think that he trusts Enzo too much. I talked about it a little bit earlier in this podcast, but the fact that he's really, you know, trusting him to give that information to Enzo, trusting that Enzo was going to vote that way with him voting out Nicole, like just trusting Enzo and then realizing when Enzo's not doing the things that you think he was going to do and still trusting in Enzo. And so I think that him really relying on their relationships when they don't have a final two deal, I think that very detrimental to his game, because he should be trusting him a lot less.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm not sure how you don't look at that and go, oh, wait, Enzo didn't do what he said he was going to do. Let me run and talk to Enzo again and tell him everything I know.
It's like, good plan.
Yeah, that's exactly it. All right. Appendix A is up next, and it deals with the jury phase of the game and planning for the end. And there are two things to talk about here: what Tyler did to plan ahead and what the others accomplished in voting out Tyler. For the first part, I thought Tyler was doing some good jury management by telling evictees about the alliance and his goodbye messages, letting them know, you know, that he was playing the game, explaining what happened. Chantel, kind of like what you mentioned, you know, you can save it till the final two. Now in Big Brother, they have goodbye messages too, where, you know, it's great. Right. But again, it's the same thing. Tell them after they're gone. you know, so it can't be used against you. Now, additionally, of course, he had his final two deal with Christmas. And it wasn't just because he got along with her. he told Dalton Ross that he felt like there were a couple of times when she might have rubbed people the wrong way, mm-hmm. which it seemed like was his nice way of saying, yeah, people don't like her. He added that if he was sitting next to her in the end, he might have been able to explain his game a little bit better than she would. Again, I think that was him being nice and just saying, yeah, she's a goat to take to the end.
Just
a goat.
No, I do think that all of that is certainly spot on. I mean, I think that Tyler is someone, as we've talked about, has a way with people. And I do think that if he is sitting there in the final two against someone like Christmas, I do think that he's going to have a much easier time explaining his game. And people will kind of fall into that thing that Tyler has when he talks to you, because he does connect to people. He really does. And I don't feel like Christmas does. I feel like Christmas comes across as very rehearsed and trying to say things to people that they want to hear, as opposed to just being genuine, where I think Tyler tries to be genuine and then realizes, well, maybe this isn't what they want to hear, but I'm being me. And I think that plays well for him. And I think that's not something that Christmas brings to the table. So the fact that he was thinking that far ahead early on, I do think speaks volumes about his read on people. You know, if he was willing to say, I want to take Christmas and she's my final two, and if in the back of his mind it was because sitting next to her is going to be good for me, I think that's a good thing that he was doing very early on in the game and thinking long term by making that decision to take her to the final two with him.
As a viewer and a fan, though, I just wish he made that final two with pretty much anybody else in the game. I was rooting against them doing well, you know, like for most of it. Like anybody, if he did that with Dave Vaughn or Janelle or Kate, like anybody, yes. I'd been like, yes, like good final two. And like they would have been able to actually have some game talks. I think that he needed somebody else to be bouncing off game ideas that would get him in the game mood. I think that he didn't like the, you know, basically one major alliance clobbering the other major alliance. Like, I don't think he actually really liked the feeling of that. It just, you know, just swatting a fly on your big cat. Like it's just not balanced. And mm-hmm. so I think that's where, one part of where he was not enjoying the game as much. And so if he had a final two with someone that he was strategizing with, that like he could exercise his gifts and talents a little bit better, I think that he would have, as a viewer, I would have like enjoyed it obviously a lot more. But I think that he would have enjoyed the game a lot more. And I think that the fact that he wasn't enjoying himself was partially why he wasn't able to do as well. He didn't like the game he was playing or the game that he was in. And so that's probably why he also didn't do that well. And it's kind of why the people that left the jury didn't care for him that much, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because a lot of times, like I haven't thought of it that way, because a lot of times, you know, I'll say there'll be people like Brent, for example. Brent wants activity. He wants action. He wants things happening, crazy stuff going on. And then you've got people like, you know, I find that I'm often on the same exact plane as Taryn. Like, no, the game is this. So from a game standpoint, it absolutely makes sense for a group of six comp beasts to get together and knock out everybody else. From mm-hmm. a viewer perspective, it sucks.
Yes.
From a game sense, it makes perfect sense for Tyler to pair up with the goatiest goat of the season, and that would be Christmas. From, you know, our perspective, no, we don't want him to, you know, bring Christmas to the end. Come on. And but what I hadn't thought of is what that does to the player. Like you were just saying, Chantel, that, you know, he didn't have, I mean, you can't bounce game strategy off of Christmas. I mean, you know, maybe you could bounce a ball off of her head, but you can't, you know, bounce strategy off of her. And the same thing with the rest of the, you know, the committee. It's their strategy was get rid of everyone else.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting. Yes. Someone, I mean, it would kind of be like if Brent were in there in Tyler's place, he'd be like, no, people, we need to do this. We need to do, you know, something different. And, you know, but Tyler was just so restrained in mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah. I think that's a great point.
I was watching Howie. So Howie from season 6 and 7 was on Jolene's podcast. And one thing he said that really stuck with me is that the reason why we're not enjoying this game. So yes, we know it's like a big alliance taking out everybody else. But it's like when we're watching, say, a sports game and it's really like neck and neck, the best of the best playing for the, you know, the league status or whatever happens in sports. And like, you know, it's like, okay, one team's up and the other team's up and they get a touchdown and they get a, you know, and it's going back and forth. That's exciting. You stay till the end of that game because it's riveting. You don't know who, because the best are playing. You don't know who's going to win. You watch the whole thing. But when it's like, okay, it's going to be a blowout. Like you're going to your car early. You're like, okay, let me know if something changes. I want to miss all the traffic, you know, and you leave the game early. And so it's very interesting, like looking at the game in that, from that perspective. And like, okay, that's another reason why I haven't been enjoying it that much. And I think because Tyler is a player that likes to play the game, I think that the fact that it was just kind of a blowout, it lost its kind of zeal, the funness to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last night, Thursday night. My wife and I were watching the episode together. Halfway through, she got up and left. And then afterwards, she was like, it's so boring. The season is so boring, you know? And it's like for her, you know, she watches it more from the Brent perspective. You know, she's not looking at the strategy and things. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I totally understand that viewpoint. And, you know, it's correct. Now, moving on to what the other players, you know, did in terms of this appendix, we already discussed what a big threat Tyler was at the end. So they knew they had to get rid of him before that point. As it stands right now, it is my firm belief, and I know I'm not alone in this, this is not a unique viewpoint, that Cody can beat anyone else left in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that would have been true against Tyler. It would have been close. We couldn't have sat here right now and said, this is absolutely what the outcome would be. I don't think. I also think Tyler could have beaten anyone in the house other than maybe Cody. So it was in everyone's best interest to ensure they didn't have to worry about Tyler.
They should also be ensuring they don't have to worry about Cody. Yes, but Cody has done such a phenomenal job setting himself up with all of his potential options. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to change. I really don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it, but I can't see a scenario where he doesn't get to the end and win. Nobody's going to take him out, which I think is quite shocking that nobody is willing to make the game move of the season and take out the only person that is going to be there to win. And then it gives everybody a chance, at least at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's because Nicole knows that Cody's going to take her to the end because he thinks he can beat her. And I think she's been playing that kind of card up. It's like, oh, if you can beat me, I know you can beat me. Like, you're going to, you know, it's going to be a blowout. But I think that, you know, I wish that the other players were starting to think about, like, well, can I really beat Cody? Like, he's actually won, 6 competitions at this point. He might even still win a couple more. He hasn't really made anybody feel all that bad. Maybe Danny might be a little bit slighted by him, but I think that she has a bit of a crush on him. So, like, I don't think that she would go against voting with him in the end.
Right.
So, he has all the votes to me. I don't know what they're thinking right now. Like,
they're not thinking. That's the problem. I mean, you know, we don't typically do predictions at the end of these podcasts. We do in Survivor, but at the end of these, because we don't want to accidentally, you know, this is a spoiler-free podcast, and we don't want to accidentally say anything that, you know, there won't be a show on for another couple days after this comes out. But my prediction, which I pretty much just gave, is, yeah, Cody's going to win. And anybody who has the opportunity to take him out and fails to do so, it's their own fault for losing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't discount that at all. But I also am curious.
Why Cody won.
I'm also curious too, because I do think that it is probably easier for us to say, well, why won't anyone take Cody out? Because we're seeing everything that Cody is doing. I think the one thing that Cody is doing very well is keeping everything kind of on the down low with how much he's actually in control. I mean, Memphis thinks that he is just running the show. I think Christmas gives her a lot more gives herself a lot more credit than she really deserves. Yeah. And so he's done a very good job of pulling the strings without people really recognizing that he is. And the one thing that is very obviously is his winning of the comps. I mean, that's something he can't hide. You know, people see him winning, so they're going to know that. But I think the stuff that he's doing behind the scenes, he's done very well at kind of keeping it on the down low. I mean, everything with Enzo, I mean, it's very impressive that he's been able to do everything he's done with Enzo and keep that so secretive. So maybe that's part of the reason why people aren't necessarily viewing him as much of a threat, because in their mind, they feel like they're in control and they're running the show, and especially Memphis. So I don't know if maybe that plays into it as well.
And I think also for the fact that they've been in power this whole time and working together this whole time, that I think they never really had the opportunity to start plotting against each other. And so I think that they're just sticking with the plan, basically. Mm-hmm. And so they just kind of have to move forward. And the plan has been that Cody's going to be final two with everybody that's left in the game at this point. And so they just have never been going against the plan. And so I think that that's probably why this is another blind spot of theirs, is that like they never had to strategize against each other. And they just don't seem to want to right now. They're just like, well, hopefully it's not me, which is how everybody is hoping with this alliance. It's like, hopefully I'm not the ninth and the eighth and the seventh, you know, and they're just hoping that they're not the next one out, as opposed to what we are hoping that they would do is like, okay, let's take out the people that might beat us in the end at this point, and let me set myself up a little bit better. Like, nobody's doing that. They're just like trying not to be last.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I swear that's from a movie. Stick to the plan. Like, that's from a movie. Like, I've heard that.
Well, I believe it's from Survivor. Yes.
Stick to the plan. Stick to the plan.
Just gotta stick to the plan. All right. I think it's about time to wrap things up. So, Chantel, what are your final thoughts about Tyler?
My final thoughts about Tyler. I mean, I didn't particularly enjoy him at the beginning of the season. I wasn't a fan of Tyler. He wasn't someone that I was particularly rooting for in the beginning. Obviously, I was like, I wanted Janelle and Devon and Danny to work together. Like, I wanted the women to run the house. Like, that's what I wanted to happen. And so he wasn't part of that narrative. So I wasn't really feeling Tyler at the beginning. But once it came towards the end here, I was kind of like really hoping that he could have like just kicked it into gear and really start playing this game. I thought that he was capable of doing better. I thought he was capable of winning at some points of this game as well. And so I'm really sad that, you know, the game didn't go in a way that allowed him to want to play the winning game that I think that he had in him. So as much as, you know, I don't like the way the season's going, I really actually realized that I've enjoyed Tyler as a person and a player. And he said that he's never going to play again, but he is somebody that I would like to see play again in a season that might be geared towards allowing him to play to his strengths. So I would say that I've come out of this season liking Tyler more than I did when I started, wishing the best for him and Angela's cookbook. And I hope to see him play a game like a celebrity game with Janelle and Kacer and, you know, and like a good version of Survivor, Big Brother, or maybe Survivor.
That could be Survivor, not
a bad idea, where he could just play the game without having all these other issues that he was kind of grappling with. So I came out a Tyler fan.
Nice. I do think that Tyler really became his own worst enemy. He set himself up to fail, unfortunately, because he came into this game with such concerns about how he played season 20 that it completely limited his ability to play this game to the level that he's capable. He comes in with a lot of natural talents and a lot of natural gifts that really could have helped him thrive, especially in a season like this where you have all stars and everyone is expecting the gameplay to be increased and is expecting the gameplay to be a little more cutthroat. I don't think anyone would have faulted Tyler for doing what everyone likely expected him to be doing, and that is making all kinds of final two deals. If that's what they're expecting of you, that is not something you change about your game. That's a strategy that you need to have playing this game. And if people expect it, then that's what you should, like, Chantel, you said lean into it. I think that was a great way to phrase it. He really should have leaned into it. So he put himself in a very, very bad position right off the bat because he didn't do that. He didn't play the game with that gusto that we saw him play the game before because he was so nervous to do so. He was so afraid that it was going to work against him. And then when he finally realized he needed to start playing the game, it was too late. And everyone already had their final two deals and everybody had their final three deals and had their fours and their sixes and all these variations on the alliances that we've seen. And he was so locked into that one group and Christmas and that was it. And so unfortunately for Tyler, he put himself in a very bad position and he could have been in a great position just considering what we've seen of Tyler and also how people respond to Tyler. So I do think that unfortunately for Tyler, he really kind of did this to himself in an unfortunate way because he could have played the game so much differently and he just didn't allow himself to. And that, I think, was one of the biggest hindrances that we saw regarding Tyler's game.
Yeah. Yeah. When Bailey was evicted, she told Julie Chen that Tyler was everybody's untouchable. In fact, Tyler was basically nobody's untouchable. Mm-hmm. Many of us saw at the very beginning of the game that Tyler was avoiding final two deals and worried that it would end up hurting his game. It did. And I think he realized it right about the time he was watching goodbye messages. But of course, by the time you're seeing those, it's way too late. Arriving at the final six, Cody had final two deals with just about everyone but Tyler. Memphis had endgame deals with just about everyone but Tyler. Enzo had deals with pretty much everyone but Tyler. Nicole had at least a couple, and they were not with Tyler. Tyler had Christmas. Sort of, maybe, but he lost even that, whatever he had there, when he tried to quit. That meant that when his usefulness as a shield was done, so was he. He was simply too much of a threat to keep around because even without strong finalist allies, he could have still done significant damage, especially to Cody's plans. And he showed his true colors when he attempted to pull both of Cody's allies away by trying to vote out Nicole and then turn Enzo. Tyler schemed and plotted too much when he shouldn't have, but failed to scheme and plot enough when he should have. His failure to make multiple finalist deals came back to haunt him when he revealed his true standing too soon and without a good backup plan. And that is why Tyler lost.
Sad.
Yes. So sad.
So sad.
That's what I was rooting for.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like how many more weeks do we have now before Cody wins?
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we wrap things up here, I wanted to mention that although the rules are different for Survivor and Big Brother, normally behind me, we have a depiction of the Survivor rules drawn by Eric Reichenbach. I went with a different background, but Jessica has the poster in question there. And so anyone can get that at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2. And of course, we have another way you can get the rules so you can always have them with you, and that is t-shirt form.
Oh my gosh! I didn't know that's something I needed in my life.
So you can go for that, you can go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com, click on the merch link near the top. And then sort the store and you'll find that there. I also want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Once you join, you'll see all the great perks Rob has for patrons, including tons of opportunities to interact with Rob on call-in shows, on the Facebook groups, and much more. He, of course, has added for Big Brother the one-hour show, call-in show before the eviction episode. And that's in addition to everything else he does, the Facebook Fridays, the patron casts, which are 5, 6, 7 hours long. So remember, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
And you should also follow us all on Twitter. I am at Jessica Lewis, right down here. He is at David Bloomberg. And Chantel is at Shan Fran Fran, is that right? Am I saying that?
That's right.
Correctly?
That's on actually Instagram.
I was
Instagram. Okay.
All right. Yes. On Twitter, it would be at Shan_Fran.
Ah, there you go. All right. So you should definitely follow. That's, I love this. The Fran Fran's great. I think that's awesome. So you should definitely follow all of us and get all of the content that we post, both regarding Big Brother. And if Survivor ever comes back into our lives, we post about that too. And anything else that's happening in the world that we wish to comment on or, you know, post pictures about and whatnot. So you should definitely follow us all at Jessica Lewis 89, at David Bloomberg, and at Shan Fran Fram.
Or at Shan_Fran on Twitter.
Yes!
I'm impressed you get all those underscores. That's good.
That's right.
Well, so, when you don't have the what you want, you have to like make different things that you'll remember that are easy to remember. And so when everybody started knowing me as underscore, I didn't change it to Shan Fran Fran, which is what I should have done. But now I think it's too late. So I have to just stick with it being different. It's too late.
So besides Twitter and Instagram, where else can people find you and the things you're working on? You mentioned some of them at the beginning of the show, but you know, make sure everybody knows where to find you.
Absolutely. So like at Shan Fran Fran on Instagram, I do have a link to all the stuff that I'm involved with. But I've been doing a lot of different recaps for the different reality shows that have been going on since I've just been at home since March. And so I'm like, well, what else can I do other than watch my favorite things, which is reality television? So I've been upkeeping. I just finished off with Love Island. We've been doing a daily live chat with the people in the chat room about the show. It's been really fun. And so that's on my YouTube channel, and that is Reality Realness with three S's. And so we're going to be doing some The Bachelorette and a little bit of The Amazing Race and The Masked Singer right now. So that's what's coming up on the docket.
Great.
So fun.
Great. So it's Reality and Realness.
Yes.
Yes.
Like obviously, it. Two S's wasn't available. You know,
yeah,
that's the deal.
There's a couple of underscores in there.
Yeah.
I didn't want the underscores. I'm like, no, this is better.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we need a hashtag, and I did not come up with one off the top of my head. Do either of you have suggestions?
Just.
Just
Tyler.
Just Tyler. There we go.
Tyler.
All right. Yes.
Perfect.
All I can think of is, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the show. Just Jack.
Oh,
Will and Grace.
Yes, Will and Grace. Thank you. So we've got Just Tyler.
Just Tyler.
And of course, there's a hashtag for this podcast overall, YX Lost. Also, make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Big Brother podcasts at robhasawebsite.com/BB podcast or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed. So if you subscribe to that feed, you'll get, you know, these podcasts are Survivor podcasts whenever they come back and so much more. Also, I mentioned last week that you should be sure to subscribe to Post Show Recaps, which is the RHAP Universe's friendly neighborhood scripted television podcast, where they're talking about all kinds of different movies and shows. Hosted by Josh Wiggler and friends, the Post Show Recaps roster includes Down the Hatch, a weekly spoiler-filled Lost rewatch podcast, Everything is Super, a weekly podcast about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and other superhero movies and shows, Aang in there, and Avatar, the Last Airbender rewatch podcast, and much more. And Post Show Recaps has launched its own Patreon, where you can get patron-only podcasts, a dedicated Discord server, and more. Go to postshowrecaps.com or subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you like what you hear, you can get even more content by becoming a patron at postshowrecaps.com/patron.
That was a mouthful right there.
I was the exact same thing. I was like,
That was a lot.
Hey, yeah, from last week, I must admit that I cut a few post show recaps out of the.
There was a lot of post show recaps.
Yeah, I cut a few out of there. That time, but
well, that was good.
So anyway, that about does it here. In another week, we will be right back to discuss Big Brother again with a great guest. So be sure to tune in for that.
And I'd love to say thank you to Scott St. Pierre for all of the editing that he does on both the audio and video version of Why Blank Lost. So thank you, Scott, for all of the incredible work that you do. And also thank you to Will from America, who created the theme song that you hear on the audio version of the Why Blank Lost podcast. So thank you, Will. We do appreciate the tune. It's quite catchy. And thank you, Chantel, for joining us today. This was great to have you. You are definitely so much fun and came up with some great points. So I really, really appreciate it because you made David and I both think a little bit more outside the box. So thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it so much.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. I always will say yes. I love talking about this stuff. It's super fun with people that are also fans as well. So I loved it.
Yes. Well, thank you also from me. And thank you, Jessica, for another great week. I will see you next week. And everybody else, again, we will see you next week with another great guest. Thanks a lot. Bye.
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 If you lost Big Brother and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.